this regular scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We are at the administrative agenda part of our meeting. And we have one item on consent. I move approval.
Second.
Second,
yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, sorry. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Now we'll get back on track and move to the discussion matters. And the first thing is a year-end public comment report from Stacy.
I know you guys wait for this all year long, but you guys should have a copy in your paperwork, I hope.
We do.
Okay. So we do this annual report every year, and what this shows is all of the public comments that the commission has received within the last year. So this is for 2022. And this includes people who call with general questions, people who call to comment about cases, people who call to file informal complaints, and also people who call and are referred to other places. So this will show all of them. So I'll kind of walk you through the highlights, and then if you have questions as we go, just feel free to jump in. On page 2 is the summary of all contacts recorded. So this is, once again, every single contact that has been recorded into the system for the year. It's giving you a 5-year view so you can kind of compare the different categories. But looking at the total, we had 1,027 contacts recorded, which is almost the same as last year. A little bit up from the year before. And then, as you can see, we had some anomalies in 2019 due to a specific case. So that one kind of skews things there. But very similar to what we've seen past years. If you look down the categories, ones that I kind of denoted for you that are a little different, citing, you'll see 86 there, which is up from previous years. 47 of those are the Summit Carbon Pipeline comments that we've received so far. And the categories get a little confusing, I think, the way the system does it, but it does it by company category. So if you look at, like, electric utility that actually dropped, that's because if we have a wind case, it actually denotes that as an electric utility. So in previous years, I think we had lots of wind cases going on. So those fall under electric utility, not siting. It's just the way our system separates those. So that one was down.
And that's the case even if it's not one of our utility companies involved in it. It would, yep. All wind cases fall
under electric utility when you put it in the system. Yep. And then you'll see weights and measures had a big increase from the past years. And looking through that data, it looks like they sent out a notice of noncompliance letters, which got people's attention, which was good because I think that's what they're aiming for. And they had 187 responses back to the office when those letters were sent out. So that's what prompted that big number under weights and measures. So they were actually sending out letters telling people they weren't in compliance and they needed to do something, and they actually replied, which was good.
Doing something was calling you.
No, they would have. Shelley probably fielded almost all of those. Yeah.
What's this?
Yeah.
And in these numbers on this page.
Yep.
This the comments that we get at hearings are not part of this, right?
No, because that would be under the actual formal case record. These are all considered informal contacts. And same with formal complaints. If there's an actual formal complaint, such as damage prevention or something else that rises to the formal level, then it wouldn't be on here. It would be an actual docketed case.
Would there be any benefit to add, like, an addendum to this, that we are processing, like, a damage prevention? I'm just throwing it out. Would there be any benefit?
Maybe.
To show
it's a whole
different
system. So I...
Say that again. Addendum to...
Like, if there's an actual, like, 811 complaint filed, that wouldn't be on here. Or if there's a citing formal complaint.
Sure.
Or anything that rises to the formal level.
Sure.
I'm just saying, would it be of any benefit to get a true picture of the number of cases? That could be in the end of the year report or your...
It's a different system that actually I don't know how to do that with. But
we do track those cases, total cases, through the annual report somehow.
Right. The biannual.
Yeah, we have an iFile open, so every single one that we receive gets...
It's just...
This was more intended to look at, to capture stuff that isn't captured there. Like when this was created, not to say it can't change and be broader.
It's a different system, so...
Just the consumer affairs stuff, like the more, like...
Informal.
Public engagement comments, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Versus all cases that the commission covers.
The day-to-day.
Yeah. I mean, we can certainly look at something like that, but it is a completely different system.
Right.
That I couldn't pull automatically into this report. And
but that is an interesting comment, though, because it probably... you know, we have seen this, like, because we know what it is included and isn't, but from the outside perspective, they might think that this captures everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, you know, a good...
That's why we kind of call it a public comment report. It's not a case report. It's not a...
Yeah.
We do encapsulate a lot of that information when we do our biennial report about the actual cases.
Yeah.
And maybe just a statement in here.
Mm-hmm.
That might be a benefit that for case, please refer to...
Yeah. This doesn't include...
This does not include
formal cases. Or something.
Yeah. All the formal cases. And you could even... Because you'll do a news release with this, Stacey.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe include the numbers that we include in the biennial report for the total number of cases in that statement. Like, this captures the public input, does not include, you know, formal cases of which there was, you know, and then just summarize those.
Yeah.
Because that is in the biennial report.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I think we mentioned the total number in the beginning, and then each division mentions it
breaks
in
it
their
down.
Sections. I don't think we have, like, a nice little chart for it or anything. And that'd be by the biennium, not the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you could mention it by the biennium. I don't know. Take a look at that. That's good.
Yeah.
Point. That's a good catch, actually. Really good. Could I ask a couple questions?
Yep.
The auction numbers surprised me. Even though they're the same as last year. So I must not have noticed that last year or I'll have forgotten.
Trending downward.
Trending downward. Most of those, if I look here and I'm reading it correctly, they're auctioneers calling us.
Yep. So, if you turn to page 4, which is the next section that breaks it down, you'll see it's people calling about their licenses, their license applications, their renewals, couple questions about schools, bonds, internet auctions. So, they're contacting us about different issues.
Are any of these a public member? Could you look through this list, Stacy or Conrad, and say, like, of the, you know, of all of these 83, this number is the public calling with the concern?
It depends on how much information was put into the entry.
Yeah, if the first, I mean, if we've got kind of first and last name on there, we'd be able to see. It takes take a little bit of time, but we could see who is licensed with us.
Oh, you'd have to go through all that.
We'd have
to,
I wouldn't be able to look at it and say
the
names and just say, oh, this is, you know, dealing with this or that. I guess I'd have to.
Unless they put something in the text when you put
it
in
about. And
I'm
not taking a look at what you've looked at there, so I'm not too familiar with how that's laid out.
I don't know. Just, again, it's another information piece in our legislative discussion that, you know, we fielded 85 questions, you know, people calling in, and all but two were auctioneers themselves.
Right.
If you look at the list, almost all of them are licensing or bond.
Yep.
Or, so you assume that's from a licensee.
Yeah.
There's, what, 8 of them that are listed as like an internet auction.
Yeah. And sometimes our licensees will call with like a jurisdictional question.
Those can be either or, yeah. But.
Okay, so that was that question. I think that was it. But on the rail stuff, I wanted to mention there that most of those are blocked crossings and other public questions about the rail, that if we didn't have this program, those would go to the railroads and a 1-800 number or nowhere. So I think that that's, again, a testament to the value of having knowledgeable staff mm-hmm. who can communicate rail issues well with the public.
Yeah. Okay.
Good job, Stacey. Well, you're doing a great job with all this.
Yeah, if we go through just a little more, point out on page 3 is a breakout of just our, I don't know what I call them directly regulated companies. So it's our 3 electric gas utilities plus Dakota Natural Gas, which is another gas utility that we regulate now, and then CenturyLink, which is the only telecom that we regulate to that capacity. Once again, giving you a 5-year comparison. CenturyLink was up a little bit from last year and from 2020, but kind of consistent numbers from other years. Note there that if you do look through the data, almost all of them are outage related. So these aren't just people calling with billing issues or something. They actually have no service. MDU's complaints very steady, only 12 for the year, so very low. Otter Tail's 4 for the whole year, so very low. Excel's were up a little bit from last year, but looking through that, I didn't see any obvious reasons. There were some more related to disconnects, which higher bills, I think there's a little more disconnects, and then I think they're doing some catch-up from COVID when they weren't disconnecting, and then there are some entries in there just about concerns about high bills,
mm-hmm.
which we experience with very high natural gas prices. So I think some of that plays into those numbers, but still nothing dramatic.
Can I ask a question on
yep.
the informal complaints
yep.
against our regulated entities? Do
yep.
we send this back to them so they
yes.
know
yep.
what...
Yep, when I get a complaint, it gets sent to them, and then they work with the customer to fix it.
Well,
and I kind of play as the middleman and go back and forth and just make sure that they do something to fix it. And then,
but do you give them a final end-of-the-year summary, like... send it out that...
Yeah, they'll get the news release when it goes out with the numbers, yeah. And some of them request it sometimes, too.
Okay.
They do their own.
I know you work
reports.
With them on a daily basis if you get a complaint.
Yep. Yep. So. They probably are tracking it already, I'm thinking, when I file them with them. Because I think they're very aware. Yeah.
So, when it comes to either telecommunications or electric,
mm-hmm.
I see these are all... are pretty much all complaints that would at least be with a jurisdictional company. And I have a hard time imagining that all these, that nobody gets confused when they're frustrated with their provider and calls us about their electric co-op
yep.
or their telephone co-op if
yep.
they're not happy. Does it just almost never happen and that's why I'm not seeing it?
No,
or
it
do
happens
you not
a
include
lot.
These in there?
That would be in the referrals.
That's
enough. So
okay.
if you see the on the first chart, the bottom line is referrals, and then if you go to the back portion, it'll list all of them. Let's see where they start.
13.
And yes, no, we get calls about co-ops. We get calls about cell phones a lot, cell phone providers, cable TV providers, water. You know, city utilities, water, garbage are pretty common. So those all get put into referrals.
Yeah, I see it now.
Yeah, and I just talk with the people and explain to them that you know, if it's a co-op, you have a board of directors elected by the members that oversee your operations, and, you know, city utilities. I explained to them that that's under their city jurisdiction that they need to go back to. And
did you get the person their birth certificate and the other person their driver's license?
No, but I get them to the right department.
Good, and I appreciate that we are able to be patient and help some people even when it's not our job.
Yeah, yeah, we do our best to explain to them at least how it works or get them to the right agency.
Thanks for the report, okay. Stacy. You did a great job with that, and it is helpful to see it.
And you guys can peruse and ask me questions later if you want. But, yeah, the different sections, like I said, the first one breaks down the data by jurisdiction, and then there's another section that'll break it down by company for the PUD-related stuff, so you can see specifically what Excel had and what Ottertail had and so forth. And then the last section is the referrals, which, like you said, is a lot of stuff.
Okay. Anything else on the annual report on comments received?
Okay. I will work with Commissioner Haugenhoffert on a news release, and so you guys will see that, and we'll get that going. Okay. Great job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate your monthly updates and those detailed information. It's very good.
Yeah, those are nice to look through.
Okay, we'll move to Conrad with the Damage Prevention Outreach Campaign.
Yep. Thank you very much, Commissioners. So this is the time of year you would have seen Victor in my position last year doing this for you, so I'm bringing it to you this year. Excited to enjoy the new program, but wanted to discuss looking at how the Commission would like to, invest the grant money that we've received from FEMSA for our outreach campaign as part of our One Call Dam Prevention grant that we receive from them annually. Last year, the money that we were allotted was a total of $8,155, and we spent $6,050 on billboards in those locations you can see listed there, and then the remainder was spent on educational materials, the clips, the lanyards, and notepads that we purchased. This year, our grant was reduced a little bit, so we've got a total of $7,795. I understand in the past that there's been some discussion on potentially expanding the type of outreach we do and maybe looking into a digital media platform. I've been speaking with the MABU Media, not MAU, M-A-U-U, should be M-A-B-U. And Stacy has been awesome in helping us work that as well. She's been on the calls with them. To just understand a little bit about how they do their outreach and what they can offer to us, which would be, you know, targeted advertising on Facebook or YouTube and some of those digital areas where they can track it. Seeing if we want to maybe potentially, you know, my recommendation would be, you know, split up some of the money that we've spent on billboards, you know, continuing to do potentially some of those, but also dabble in the digital media area a little bit. $3,000 for digital media is not that much. Even $10,000 wouldn't really be that much. And so one thing that's nice is this agency is the same one that North Dakota One Call uses as well. So what we'd be able to use is for the areas that we'd be willing to spend and advertise in, and the money we'd spend with them is they would use the North Dakota One Call stuff they've already developed. None of the stuff that we put out under these funds says PSC or has the commission logo. It's all to promote North Dakota One Call. Mm-hmm. And so I've spoken with North Dakota One Call, and they wouldn't have an issue with allowing us to use some of the stuff that they've developed and just, you know, helping fund it to get the message out. Typically, this is put out March and April. April is a safe digging month annually. And also just kind of the start of the construction season as well, because the ground's thawing and everybody is eager to get out there as well. And then reserving a little bit of the funding over for additional educational materials. We've got some left over. We've got a lot of lanyards. We've got probably a quarter of the clips we've purchased, and potentially look at stocking that back up as well. And so I wanted to get the perspective from the commission on what your thoughts. If you're interested in staff trying some digital media, we'd also get a report at the end of that so we can see where the money went, how it was used, how many people did it impact, mm-hmm. or how many, I can't remember the official term that they use in that industry, but, you know, the primed, the targeted audience and you know, how many people viewed that as well, so they're able to track some of that data, and we can then analyze it to see was that a good use of that funds as well, or if we want to change it up for next year.
And so the, well, I'll just say so I don't forget this, but at the state fair, when I helped for a shift in the booth, I don't think I ever seen anyone take a lanyard. I don't know that I've ever gone to anyone's booth and wished that I had a lanyard. I don't know if, I just don't think that that's a very effective thing.
Yeah, and we, I wouldn't, I definitely agree with you. I don't think the lanyards, we've got some, we've got a box of them left, so we're going to obviously continue to use them. But we've actually been, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, resurrecting an oldie but goldie, the glow-in-the-dark cups went over very well in the past and looking at, you know,
potentially. I'm counting on you guys to figure that out.
But
yeah, the bigger question that I had besides the lanyard thing was, on the digital media, the $3,000, so that would be what we would pay someone to push that message toward the right people.
Correct.
Right? The people who are contractors and posting about that kind of work would be the ones who would be inclined to get.
Yep, it would be targeted to you know, kind of the demographics and the industry that we're wanting to target to. So it'd be kind of pushed towards those excavators and contractors, and working through that. Yeah.
Okay. So, I don't like this idea. I think it's great, and I love piggybacking on the investment that the One Call is making online too. But the billboards, 3,500 in billboards, does the One Call board also invest in billboards? No, that's
I'm going to say, top of my head, I'd have to confirm with them to give you 100% answer, but I don't believe they invest in billboards.
Okay.
That's strictly something that that we've done.
Okay, that's fine. That. The billboards with 3,500, which is half of what you had last year, I'm assuming you'll have fewer locations, or I guess just... Who do you rely on to tell you where to use that money?
Working with the billboard company on kind of the locations, I know these are the locations that were listed have been historically used.
Right.
You know, the Dickinson, Fargo, West Fargo, Jamestown, Devil's Lake, Wahpeton. Trying to cover kind of the major city areas. So obviously, with reduced funding there, you know, would reduce our ability and. My thought process would be to focus on, you know, hitting up kind of the six major city areas in the state. You know, I don't necessarily know even if we wanted to go more billboards on it as well, if we necessarily needed to have two billboards between Bismarck and Mandan along the interstate system. I mean, you can probably assume people driving across are going to see it one side or the other side. So
I'm fine with however you decide to do that. Just wanted to make sure that the billboard company is giving some rationale for
where they want them
to get the most bang for the $3,500. That's all. Otherwise, it looks good.
I want to say a couple things on billboards. I don't think billboards, the point of them ever is that, you know, 4 months after you drove by one, you're thinking, I remember that billboard. I got to call One Call before I start this project. And so, like you mentioned, some of the larger cities. You know, if we're going to have one in Fargo, yeah, I know there's development all over in Fargo, but where there's a great deal of development is in West Fargo. And so I think, you know, not necessarily the size of the city so much, but where is a lot of activity
where's the activity
taking place on this particular year.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I also know...
And then I have one more thing, but it looked like Victor might have a response.
Victor,
that.
History here.
I just wanted to speak to the billboards we've got in the past. So, just to clarify, the billboards that we're getting, or we have got in the past, are smaller billboards that aren't generally the nice new ones that are along the interstate. So, the one in Bismarck, for example, is on the end of Main, where Main and Expressway hook up, and it's just a good example of one that's set back from that intersection quite a ways, but it's at a size and a price point that allowed us to put a billboard there. Those nice big billboards along the interstate are very expensive. I feel like I've seen one call
on the interstate, but maybe it's the one on Main Street.
Well, honestly, it may have been somebody else's as well.
Okay.
It could have,
yeah.
So
there's utilities that pay for those
too.
Oh,
okay.
Right. They do.
I think they're
pretty
effective, the billboards, just because it's like, oh yeah.
Sure.
I mean, it's just a reminder.
But some of them we've got in the past weren't even lighted. So I just want to kind of point out what some of the stuff we've had in the past. I've had kind of concerns of putting all of our eggs into the billboard basket previously, and I think this is a good way to move forward, is to move into the digital. And from what I recall, I don't think the one call board is doing any billboards anymore. I know that was a question. That was kind of why I came in here. So just wanted to give you that history. I think Conrad's doing the right thing. You're thinking about it in the future.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
So I'm just going to throw this out. It doesn't have anything to do with this campaign, but because he was my friend, I just love telling this story. Back in my state senate days, Senator Bob Stengem, our leader, he had a great phrase, and he wasn't necessarily a fan of the effectiveness of billboards for our legislative candidates. But candidates, you know, especially first-timers, you know, they love to have billboards and drive by and see their name on there, you know. And Bob always used to coach our candidates that you only need two billboards. One close to your place so you can feel good, and one close to your opponent's place so he or she feels bad.
That's funny.
I just want to add, Conrad, I know you and I talked about it. I'm glad that we're going more towards digital. I like that because you can quantify it. You can get some data. I might want to, just my opinion, kind of switch the cost around. I mean, billboards... I agree. I don't know. We don't know the impact on them, and sometimes the location they're off, and if other people are doing it, is maybe flip that cost around and put more so we can see the impact maybe a little bit more. And I know it's expensive. Digital is very expensive. Coming off, I would be surprised $3,000 if you get, 3 weeks?
I don't think it's gonna bring a lot, but it's a way to step into that and see.
Yeah, so it's what we could do with that amount, and we're lucky that we can just use NDone Calls content. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do anything.
Right.
In that
so that's
realm,
what I'm just
so.
Wondering. If you want to put more towards digital versus billboards, based on some of the location that it's not prime, and just to see.
Whatever you guys ultimately decide.
Okay. Yeah, we can swap that around and. I know, you know, with the billboards too, you know, with the way they're charging $5.50 on there, we'll see how that makeup comes in. If we've got any extra, then we can certainly put it into the digital side as well, depending on where it rounds off at. So. Okay. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Okay, and then does anyone else? I think we're going to discuss a testimony coming up here before our next legislative discussion. Was there anything else for discussion today, or is that the only addition? So that's on testimony on Senate Bill 2314, right?
This is it.
There. Jack, did you tweak anything that I had proposed?
I did read it through once, and I just made small, minor changes, but nothing substantive to it. Spacing, grammars, periods, capitalizations type thing. But yes, so let's go through a final review. The one additional thing that I added was on page 2, you left open for the eminent domain process has worked effectively for X number of years. I just put down the date.
Okay.
That when the initial eminent domain law was enacted, so that we could be aware of that. There have been changes over the years, but if it is a preference to specify that, we would move off of that.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm very open to whatever you guys, because some of this stuff might be more edgy than we want to be. So I'm very open to what you want me to do in terms of tone and content. So
I have some things. Do you have some?
Yeah.
recommendations? I'll go through a few things,
yeah.
and I mean, it's not like there's anything that I see in here that, like, well, if you say that, I'm going to go down and testify opposite. It's not that. These are just more recommendations or, in a couple cases, questions to just prepare for.
Good, yep.
So on the first page, in the second paragraph, we get down about 7 lines, and I think I was like most legislators. We think of these things as bills, and amendments are amendments to our bills. Not, we didn't really mm-hmm. think of all the bill in the first place as being an amendment to the law. So where that sentence says a portion of this bill, and then comma, the amendment to 49.19.12, paragraph 2, I think a better way to phrase that would be a portion of this bill, comma, requiring a minimal threshold of landowner consent, comma, establishes parameters. Because I think that's what that portion does. And I think that would just be a more...
Well, or could we just take that out? A portion of this bill looks to establish parameters under which it may...
We could do that, too.
Yeah, let's do that.
But I think when we start talking about amendments, they think, oh, we've got an amendment.
Yeah, I was even confused by that.
Okay. And then... it's not that this is wrong, but...
Right.
They're going to think we're going to propose something.
Okay.
And then just before that... I'm not sure we should say it quite this way. So we recognize the need for and value of carefully enacted tools to allow a broader public good, maintaining essential energy and utility services. Just in articles that have been out there, things we've heard on the radio from the people who are proposing much of this legislation, that's their argument. They do not consider this essential, and they don't consider it a utility service. And
right.
So if we say that, they're going to come back with, is somebody utility now? Do you consider this essential?
Mm-hmm.
So,
the one thing to note in this bill, though, it is all pipelines.
I know, but we're focusing on that, and they're going to focus on this, so
sure.
That question will come.
So just take that out, Randy, or rephrase the whole thing, or take that whole sentence out? I mean, I also struggle with how best to communicate our stuff here. So
maybe just go with a broader public good to occur and
take out that. Okay.
And not say that.
Leave it more vague.
But I, even if we don't, the question could come at the end anyway. Because
and that is the question, though.
Yeah.
That is the question. That's why I think it's appropriate that that Jack included here and says, like, you guys are talking about this. And that's you're the appropriate ones to decide.
And so maybe it's good to throw it in there, and just to point out to them that you might think you're putting this in because of Summit, but you're covering everybody.
Yes.
And so maybe it is good, but you need. I just wanted to make sure you're prepared for that.
I agree. It's important to provide There's the property rights issue, which we appreciate and recognize and want to protect. But there is this other, it's a tool that we have to have. I mean, you can't do without it or you'll be paralyzed for future development. So, okay, I'm going to take out that maintain essential energy and utility services. Jerry, do you like that change?
Yeah, I said briefer would be better.
Okay, perfect.
And then if we could jump to the second page and right away in the middle of the first line, start with that sentence about our current eminent domain process. Now that Jack has gone through all the trouble of figuring out when it started, we're kind of saying this has been working well since it started. And maybe it has been, to the extent it's been with utilities and pipelines and power lines,
mm-hmm.
but eminent domain, I just speak from personal experience, it also applies to highways, and it wasn't always used appropriately.
Okay.
It's been totally abused at times. And so I think I would just leave this sentence that the state's current eminent domain process, then jumping toward the end of the second line, is a process of last resort, and okay. in our experience has been used sparingly.
Okay, I like that because
just take it all out.
Yeah, that
it has worked effectively, yeah. Because I do think if you've been the subject of eminent domain, it definitely didn't work effectively for you. So that's a good change.
And the next, then, I'm down in that longer paragraph in the middle of the second page. And I don't even have a recommendation. It could be something you just throw in inadvertently or be prepared for a question. But
where are we now? I'm sorry.
In this longer paragraph.
On page
in the
two?
Middle of page two.
Okay.
Like the third paragraph.
To give an example, yeah. That one.
Right. It might be good to point out to them at some point in all this that there's counties that don't even have handicapped accessible facilities that will allow us. They might only have one or two that aren't things that will make themselves available to us. We can't even have physically a hearing in some counties. We've experienced that. So, I don't know that it needs to be added, but maybe
yeah,
in response
be prepared,
to a question.
Yeah.
Or,
I think be prepared to give an example, but I think we need to keep our testimony short and very concise, because I think we're going to see a lot of testimony on this bill.
It's going to be a long, long hearing. Yeah.
It is, yeah. So that's going to be my recommendation. You can have it there.
I think it's a good point. I hope someone yep. makes it along with me somewhere. But. And my last thing, this is just a prep question. If we get Don and proponents of this legislation who... at least some of them, I think it's fair to say, are just trying to stop Summit.
Mm-hmm.
If they say, okay, you've come out in opposition to this, would you support this if it applied only to CO2?
Would you support this if it applied only to CO2?
I mean, we could get that question, and I don't know what our answer would be.
I don't support the commission ever being inserted in the eminent domain process. I just don't think it's appropriate. There's a separate process established for it. That process, you know, I just don't think adding another layer of us makes sense. They should decide whether it's something that should have eminent domain or not, and once they do that, then I think the existing process works. Personally, that's where I would be.
I agree. I don't want to get in a situation where we're picking and choosing, you know, just citing for this. Then it's in our wheelhouse, under
yeah.
our regulatory.
Yeah. How about you?
I agree.
So should I say that, or should I
no,
say
we'd
need
no.
to see the proposal and consider it, but generally we're opposed to getting inserted in any eminent domain process.
I think that was the answer
okay.
that I like.
Yep.
All right.
So.
All right. Sherry, what thoughts do you have? Because please, if there's stuff in here that you're like, "Ooh, I don't want to say that," I mean, please point it out.
When I first read it, I mean, it was good. I looked at, remember in the meeting, and Jack, you encapsulated everything that, from the initial direction that we gave you. When I read it, I just thought the first thing is we can condense it and become more concise. But then it goes down to you, Julie. You're the one who's standing up there, and it's got to have your... flair to it, as far as you know, your 10 years, and it reflects a little bit on the history. We've never had an issue, you know,
right
on that. But I think the bottom line is we don't want to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's our position now. I think shorter the better, more concise.
This
yeah.
isn't a real long.
No, it's not. It's not.
I thought it was pretty well written.
Yeah, he did exactly what we initially asked him to do. Some of the changes
okay.
that we've made has tightened it up. So
I mean, it really does focus on
yep.
The process, the redundancy. So I think that's
yep.
fair. Okay, Well,
what were your comments, Julie?
What were my comments?
Yeah, do you have any?
Well, I worked with Jack on it, so my comments are baked in here.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's so good.
Yeah. No, I mean, from my
I was worried about, you know, like I had the, aside from the current storm over Carbon Solutions project, like, it's, do we need to call, should I say that? Jack raised his eyebrow. You could probably guess that was my language, not Jack's.
I guessed it right away. I was pleased there's nothing about ice cream sodas. But,
well, I could bake in more alliteration. All right, I'll write that down.
I don't know if that causes any dilemmas for that it brings that case into it. I thought it was so fine, or I'd have mentioned it, but I don't know on the legal side if that was against Jack's advice. I'd be curious to know that, but it's okay with it.
I thought it was fairly, I thought it would be like we should just acknowledge it.
It's true.
Well, it's been acknowledged, you know, all around that these bills are here because of carbon.
Right.
Yeah.
The sponsor has sure made it known.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to see that.
Well, I think it sets it aside that prior to this.
Right, we haven't, it hasn't
it
been
hasn't come up.
Big issue.
So that's how I took it.
Yeah. Okay. And then, and that's just the truth of it. Okay, well, if you have any last minute thoughts or, you know, as the day goes, but we'll go with this. We'll make those changes.
Just a reminder of something, because it's a year ago now, probably, but there's questions. I think it was just last spring we cited one that went from Watford City to somewhere into Montana, and the North Dakota portion was over 80 miles, and they had every one of them. So it's not companies are just coming out and the domaining whole systems.
I did when I spoke to the township officers this week, and they asked a lot about this. I did say, it's been used rarely. We haven't had a lot of complaints about it. And I did say, you know, most companies work very hard to try to get all voluntary easements. And I said, in fact, I think even Dakota Access got all voluntary easements. And lady goes, no, they didn't. I was like, ugh. I said, okay, fair enough, but very few. She's like, doesn't matter when it's you. If there's only one, it's a big deal. It's like, anyway, so I won't do that again.
Okay, anything else?
Overall,
this
Jack and Julie, good job.
I think so, too.
All right, thanks. Thank you, Jack.
You're welcome. I think it may be worth just bringing up the fact that there are two other bills right before that as well, and I'm assuming that that'll all get drug in into a big hodgepodge of, you know, eminent domain CO2 lines, and so
might
be good to review that. And I'm not sure there's anything that you, the three of you, feel that we need to discuss relating to the other two eminent domain and CO2 bills. If you want, I could just give you a quick overview.
Is that the percentages that are needed, the 85%?
Right. One is the 85% easement requirement, and of course the counties can raise that level as well. Yep. The other one actually just removed solely CO2 lines from the ability to eminent domain for common pipeline carriers.
I have thoughts on just like small aspects of several of these bills, but there's so many of them, and they're going to draw out so many people. For my part, I think we present good testimony on this one that most directly impacts us. Let the Senate work, and first this committee and then the full Senate work through this process. I'm guessing that whatever passes, if anything passes, will be a much more condensed list, and we'll, you know, maybe some good ideas from some of these get melded into one or two or three bills. And then if there's things that we want to tweak, we can work on that on the House side. I guess I'm okay with just this one set of comments.
And I guess the only other distinction is the first two. They have an emergency clause. The third one we're testifying on does not have an emergency clause.
Jack and I talked about this ahead of time, and I said, you know, if it looks like this is going to pass on the next time around, we may want to call that out because they should be intentional on whether they want this or not want this to apply to this current case. And if they don't want it to apply to this current case, be prepared for that because this current case could be completed prior to the law taking effect.
Right.
And so I think, but I don't think we need to throw that in now. I think we should talk about that the next time.
Yeah,
if it moves ahead and look at how it is.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I should run by you guys too, because I do think the question that will most likely be asked, if they care, you know, depending on who, you know, if I'm a legislator and I have somebody on the commission who's working in this all the time, I would say, what do you think about CO2? Should it be concluded in eminent domain? So, I mean, the options, okay, first of all, I would say we haven't taken position on that as a commission, because that's true. And then I would have the option of saying from my own self one of a couple things. First, I could say I think it's best decided by the policymakers and leave it at that. Or I could offer perspective that it is best being decided by policymakers. But one thing that I see happening is that there is a growing concern about CO2 in the, you know, atmosphere and dealing with that. And so in order to continue the viability long-term of thermal resources, which personally, me speaking, think are important for the grid, we have to have a way to deal with the CO2. And without being able to deal with that as a side effect of electricity generation and pipe it someplace, it makes it more difficult to have thermal resources on the grid. And so I would offer that perspective in the mix, which leans to, obviously, that CO2 is, you know, a product that warrants transporting on systems that are of public interest and would have eminent domain authority.
Well, and maybe, you know, depending on what passes on the Senate side, maybe we want to figure that out and take a position. I like the first part of your answer. That,
yeah.
We're working with the bill that's in front of us. We haven't really taken a position on that. But then you're pointing out some things why they, you know, someone may conclude that it should be.
Yeah.
Another of the things in that list is we're not so long. In fact, I think they've already declared the Bakken oil field falls in the category of a mature oil field. And as technology gets better, there may be a strong desire by North Dakota to get enough CO2 for enhanced oil recovery of a field that large, and it would take pipelines. And you know,
yeah.
At that point, you may want it available.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it falls into. I think at this point, it still falls into.
Yeah.
Your part about it's the policymakers' decision.
Yeah, and I do think the industry will be making probably those cases too for the CO2. So. We'll save that for the next time.
Yeah, I like that position, saving it. I mean, having a bigger discussion on it.
Yeah.
I think at most, by the second half, we're on two or maybe three of these bills.
Just know if I get pushed, and I might on the fly just share that position as my own, just so you all are aware, depending on how things go. But I'm guessing by the time I speak, they'll be so sick of these hearings and they'll be ready to just, like, go home. So I don't think I'll get any questions. Yeah.
I just hope.
Where are you Friday night at 6 p.m. in a hearing?
I just hope we will have time to get to Amanda Godfrey's fundraiser.
Is that on Friday night?
Yep.
So if you're pushing on that, cut it short.
It's a good good one, too. Okay. Anything else, Jeff?
What's it called again?
Make a wish.
Yeah.
Anybody looking for tickets? I'm sure they're available Friday night. Good cause.
Very good.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Just one for scheduling, if you don't mind. Not listed. Sorry. So I was wondering if the commission would like to schedule a public input session for MDU's electric rate case that is scheduled for the first week in May.
My first thought is, have we decided what we want for public input session or sessions? Are we going to potentially revert now that COVID is in whatever stage it's in compared to a couple years ago and do some field availability and interconnect various places? Are we looking at one public input session? I think the last big rate case we had, we did two, one in a daytime hours kind of thing and one in the evening. But before we start scheduling, I suppose we should figure out what it is we want.
Yeah, I know in the past, the last one we had, I believe what was the MDU gas case, we started one at 12 o'clock and then the next one at 5 o'clock on the same day in the hearing room. And we could have people come in and I believe also offer testimony via a call-in option.
Are we going to open up some sites at places like Dickinson or Williston?
I don't think that's been discussed.
We didn't the last time on the XL case, right?
Right.
We did the last couple times.
Right.
But we were more fresh. I think we did until COVID.
Yeah. I just think it's kind of irrelevant to do that now. People would just assume calling from their home.
I kind of think so, too.
Yeah. It didn't seem like we got real good participation. Either way, actually, but
right.
To make people, especially in the winter, drive somewhere.
There's quite a few interveners on this one. Do you have dates, Adam? Or what are you guys talking about?
And since it is an MDU case, I mean, we do have a good population of customers around the Bismarck area, so mm-hmm. they can definitely come in here if they want to. But
there are a couple days in March, April. I've got some dates in April. I haven't reached out to the company, but I figured they could likely be flexible to what the commission would need.
When is the formal hearing?
First week in May. May 1st. Yeah.
What dates were you looking at in March?
So if we looked at about the week of April 1st, or actually the week of March 26th, and then the week of April 9th to begin with, if you have a preference on either one of those.
Have you looked at schedules already, Adam, to see what's out there in terms of being tied up or not?
Yes, I have. You know, okay. I've got the MISO stuff.
Let's see.
As well as the commission hearing dates.
Okay. So the 27th that week?
Yep. Correct.
Well, we have something already on hold for.
Yeah, that week is pretty much out.
29th. Okay. The only thing, Thursday the 30th?
I have a SPP meeting.
Okay. Yeah, that week looks pretty heavy, though.
Okay.
Now.
So then March?
That was the week of March 26th.
I mean, sorry, April 3rd?
And are you looking at? When is Easter? It's not on this calendar.
Yes. April 7th is Good Friday. Yeah, so then April 3rd 9th. Would be the next option.
Okay.
down, Brianna.
The fourth would be, is the fourth an option?
April 4th?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like I have an SVP meeting that day. I wouldn't necessarily have to be there for all the sessions, but...
Fifth?
What about the third?
I'm probably going to be out on the third.
I could do the fifth.
April 5th? I'm fine.
Okay, yeah, I will shoot for April 5th. And
are we going to do both of them the same day?
Is that how
we did the
that's how we've Excel done it in one? The past, yeah.
Last
yeah. What, 12:30 and 5:30 yeah. you guys did?
Yeah,
no,
12,
I think we did
12,
noon
two.
And 5.
No, I think it was noon and 5.
Was it 5 or 6? Either
no,
way.
Yeah,
was.
Either or. It's would have been 5:30.
One thought on scheduling these is... We should establish kind of what the range is of when we're going to keep it open. I know,
yeah.
people, you know a lot of times we're kind of hanging around waiting for, make sure we have people given an opportunity. So if we want to say noon to 1 or noon
yeah.
to 2 or whatever that kind of time range is, we should try to put that out there.
Mm-hmm.
And probably on the shorter end versus the longer end, because otherwise we're just kind of hanging around staring at each other for 2 hours. So.
Yeah,
and if there's, but we should hold our time open, and if there's a way to make it known that if there's discussion going on, we may go longer, but I don't think that they...
Well, then you... I mean, you'd
yeah,
be confusing it, because then people would be like, oh, well, I could still come at 1,
three,
and
yeah.
yeah.
So,
I think
yeah,
we should say 12 to 1, personally, and whatever, 5:30 to 6:30 if we want to, or whatever, 5 to 6. 5:30?
I'm fine. Let me check my social... I'm fine.
Your portfolio, though. But yeah, I agree. We don't want to schedule it for such a long period of time, but we should hold our schedules open after that.
Yeah.
I would say 5 to 6.
I hope we don't cut people off if they're...
Because people work a lot of flex hours and just allowing that time still. 5 to 6.
12 to 1 and 5 to 6.
Okay, sounds good.
Perfect.
And that's April 5th.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you. Shortest meeting, but has